Welcome back to the Real Arsenal Deal podcast. This is Rav, your host, here to chat about a very composed, a very professional display from Arsenal, 4-0 over Ipswich. One of the most comprehensive performances I've seen in quite some time from Arsenal, just complete from start to finish. So firstly, thank you so much for tuning in. Wherever you are in the world, I hope you're well, hope you're safe, hope you're looking after yourselves and your loved ones. And I imagine if you're anything like me, just the last few days basking in the absolute glorious nature of Arsenal's thumping 5-1 aggregate victory over Real Madrid. Like I can't not mention that because the context really matters now. The entire complexion dynamic of Arsenal's last few matches this season. We're almost into May now, just in a week or so, right? The crunch time, the crunch end of the season, right? You can't not mention what's at stake and what is potentially on the horizon for Arsenal. And, you know, it was all made possible by it was just such a beautiful, beautiful night in Madrid a few days ago. Yes, I will be coming back to Ipswich Arsenal in a moment, but the reality is, I think we all know it, we all inherently know it, and we've known this for quite some time, that the stakes of the Premier League, it is not the same, obviously. We've unfortunately fizzled out when there was an opportunity, you know, two months or so ago, and what's happened has happened, and I'm not here to relitigate and go through and dissect all of that again, because you're probably fed up discussing all the what-ifs, and I certainly am too. However, I'm so glad and so proud of the club that we've been able to compartmentalize all that noise, all that distraction, and all the pondering questions, what if we did this, what if we did that? And we just went there with such a professional mindset, and we dismantled them. And if anything, that 5-1 scoreline, if anything, like that flatters Real Madrid. They were nowhere near it. They barely landed a glove on us, and their only goal, the only blemish for Arsenal, really came about from a self-inflicted mistake. So what a monumental effort and achievement it is for Arsenal. And when I use the word achievement, I don't use that word lightly, because quite rightly, everyone will point to the fact that nothing's won yet and that nothing's done. We're into a semi-final. We have to earn the right to qualify for the final itself, which I'm very confident we will do our utmost to, and I'll talk about that separately. However, it still is an achievement for Arsenal to participate at this level of the competition. We're the only English club from the nation of England to be there, right, to qualify. You know, as much as everyone heralds Manchester City and Liverpool, and people fawn over Aston Villa as they have at times, and there's still this nagging little subsection of the Arsenal fans who I don't get, who seem to idolise Emery and want to always wave a stick at Arteta every time he does well. You know, we're the only one still there, right? We are flying the flag, and through our victory last week, I think that's the one that officially confirmed the coefficients to allow a fifth Premier League team for next season to participate in the Champions League, right? So, you know, we deserve a few thank yous, I reckon. Maybe we'll be on the Christmas card list from a couple other clubs who qualify to say thanks, Arsenal, for doing our thing in Europe. And look, obviously, I'm joking. I say that in jest. However, for Arsenal, right, it's a tremendous effort. We absolutely deserve to be there, and it's only the third time in a club of our size and stature and our reputation across Europe and the globe, right, with our fan base, our following, our rich history, it is not a great reflection, is it, that we've only been to this point of the Champions League the third time. First time, obviously, 2006, and we made it to the final, and unfortunately, I still remember watching that game live like it was yesterday, just moment of madness at the back from Jens Lehmann. You know, we did so well to take the lead, and I just had this sinking feeling that this errant inevitability that in the final 15 minutes Barcelona would score, and they did score rapid fire. E2 was causing us so much trouble down his flank, and yeah, unfortunately it wasn't to be. And then 2008-09, we were stumbling and stuttering in the league again, sadly, and made it to the semi-final against Manchester United, and we got walloped, right? We got absolutely smacked around that match at the Emirates. It still stings. It's still just the opening, we just weren't there. That was a great Manchester United team under Ferguson, and the two clubs were travelling in different trajectories at the time, and I didn't quite take it. Maybe I took it for granted, is what I'm trying to say. That I thought that, you know, we'll be back. We're just, you know, obviously it's a different era for Arsenal under Wenger. We were heavily committed to some considerable debt for the Emirates, the new stadium. We were just, you know, trying to invest in some younger talent, bring them through and blend in some players on the more experienced level. Some key players over the previous years, one by one, some glorious players for Arsenal, some legends of the club, were sold one by one, Vieira, Henri, and the list goes on. I just thought, look, we just got to ride out this little period of time. We'll be back. Wenger knows what he's doing. He's done it before. He can rebuild. We have a knack of picking out some quality talent across the European leagues, and under Arsene Wenger's nurturing and coaching, you know, we can bring them back up to that world-class level. And unfortunately, it didn't happen. And once again, I'm not here to go through and dissect all of that. You're probably wondering, where am I going with this point? And here is the point. I took it for granted that we can just get ourselves back there, and we'll be back there again soon to knock on the door of winning that first Champions League trophy for the club. And fast forward all the way now, it's 2025, 16 years later, right? We have finally been able to get to that stage, to participate at that stage of this very prestigious competition. And it's worth just reflecting on. It's just consideration to say, well done to Arsenal. Well done to Mikel Arteta. It blows my mind still, some who just are waiting with, that they're salivating for him to stumble and fail, just to pile on him. Like, it is the way Arsenal play, the way we're set up, it's largely due to him. There is such a professional nature to his approach, the system that he's built, the players that he handpicks and believes in. He empowers them with the confidence to play this style, to play this way, to have this composure, that we can get the job done no matter who we're up against. It largely stems from him. If anyone deserves, right, some more recognition, I really do believe it's Arteta. But look, again, that's a separate conversation. If you had any doubt, not that you probably should, but if you had any doubt now as to the level of confidence and belief within the group, within the club, just listen in the last week. Choose any player you like, any interview you like, Declan Rice, Yurin Timber, post-match after Real Madrid, there were some Sky News YouTube clips, or even pre-match David Raya. Listen to the way they talk. And this oozes a level of belief inside the club. Not arrogance, no, because it's not about that. It's about being humble, right? I know that's a loaded word in Arsenal terms. But they're confident within themselves, their teammates. They believe in the system. They believe in the manager, and vice versa. Declan basically said something post-match as he was receiving his Man of the Match trophy at the Bernabeu. And he said, "We have so much trust in this manager, it's unbelievable." And that speaks volumes, right? They very much believe in each other. And whoever we're up against, we believe that we can go toe-to-toe with them and beat them. And Arsenal are proving that. I don't think anyone would have predicted 5-1 going into that tie against Real Madrid. I'm so, so proud of the way they equipped themselves, the way they handled the pressure, the nerves, all the build-up and all the arrogance and entitlement coming from Madrid and Spanish media. And we just went there and flicked them aside. And we deserve the win. I'm so glad we actually won, not just scraped through on a draw, so to speak, right? But we won that match with Martinelli's brilliant, brilliant sprint at the end. He showed more intensity, more desire, right? In the 93rd minute, off the back of how many minutes he's played lately, he played the full 90 against Brentford as well last weekend. He showed more than they did. And the two players that he outrun, they couldn't cope with him, Garcia and Modric, they were substitutes. They came on to the pitch. Martinelli's been there from the first whistle, right? You'd think they would have some more energy in their tank, but he just out-sprinted them. Beautiful diagonal run. What a wonderful pass from Marino. He takes it well. His first touch completely took Garcia off the table, completely, because any contact there in that position, that's a red card, denying goal-scoring opportunity, right? He completely took that off the table. Opens up his body, Thierry Henry style. beats Courtois, which has been very difficult to do, as proven by these two matches across the tie. 2-1 Arsenal in front of the away fans. Glorious celebrations, and just caps off just a magnificent night. So I'm so proud of them. And yes, I've been talking a lot of the opening 10 minutes I've entirely devoted to that night. My apologies. And you might be wondering, why am I talking so much about this and not the match at hand? The context is so important here. You can't not refer to Arsenal's efforts in Madrid and now where we're poised, what's on the horizon for us in about 9-10 days' time against PSG. We can't not refer to it because it blends right into everything that we saw against Ipswich last night in terms of selection, performance, rotation, substitutes. So I'll get straight into that now. Look, I don't mind this kickoff time. It's 11 p.m. kickoff time here in Melbourne, Australia. I do get a lot of questions about how do I approach just this the time difference sometimes. And I try to give as much context as I can. So look, these sorts of kickoff times, I don't mind. I'll cut a long story short here, but I have a certain approach depending on what time the kickoff is. I have a certain approach that I know well in advance, and my preparation, so to speak, it starts days ahead. So everything from yesterday morning, I go to the gym every day. I think I've mentioned that's part of my routine every morning. It's part of my non-negotiables. So I will do a much lighter session, knowing that my sleep is going to be impacted. Had a wonderful afternoon yesterday with visiting family, and I believe my nephew, I hope he's listening, shout out to him. I think he's one of my newest listeners and subscribers. I then very much call it a night very early. I'm probably in bed 8:30, 9 o'clock. I try and get a little bit of sleep if I can, maybe an hour, hour and a half, crucial little block of sleep. I have my alarm set. I have my iPad fully charged. I have my headphones just all set, you know, just for me to access pretty easily and in the dark. And then I wake up around 10:50, watch the pre-match, see the selection, see the lineup, and I watch the match from there and go back to sleep soon after. And you know, by and large, this proves effective for me. Get that little block of sleep beforehand. Watch the match. I was half thinking of recording this after, but nah. By this point, it was well past 1 a.m. right? I was spent. I was done. So straight back to sleep and wake up as regularly this morning and bounce into the new day. So that's by and large my approach. I hope that answers questions for those of you. I very much welcome any of those sorts of questions. And yeah, please keep them coming. I'll read every comment, every question, and answer it as best I can. So onto selection now. So understandably, a number of changes made. I'm so relieved Ben White is fit and available, because this time last weekend, there was that little mystery knock that kept him out. There was a knock in training just prior to Brentford that kept him out. And there was a bit of concern, a bit of noise around that could it be worse than what we first thought. And that of course, places extra pressure in that position, with leaving us just with Timber or Partey at right back, and we all understand that we only do that as a necessity, right? It does take away in a key component, a key cog in midfield if we put Partey there. So glad Ben White played, and he got through the 90. That's brilliant. 90 minutes under his belt with what we now have on the horizon, potentially three absolutely critical, huge Champions League matches, right? You need everyone as fit, available as possible. And the importance of that, if you're looking for any prime examples, look across the pitch at Arsenal at the moment. Jakub Kiwior and Mikel Merino, they are testament to this mentality Arsenal has, that have players who are fit, training, available, ready to step in when their time comes. Kiwior hadn't played for 3 months. I believe he was an unused substitute for almost 3 months. Right, like that itself brings, it's difficult just to come in from the cold, right, and perform at this level. So you got to tip your hat to that. That's a whole caliber. That speaks to a caliber of professionalism and desire, and even within the group, acceptance that everyone just trusts him. Like a lot of noise was made externally, of course, when Gabriel went down, and naturally, as fans, we have a tendency to then fear monger and fear the worst. But within the group, within the squad, there's that belief that next man up, whoever's going to step in, there's so much confidence and belief in each other, and we are so well coached and drilled right, in terms of our system and our tactics, that anyone, that we just have that belief that the next man up is going to come in and do their job. Mikel Merino and Kiwior, Kieran Tierney, all of them. Jorginho, unfortunately, prior to his injury, he's also in this category of just professionalism and trust. You can step in, do your job. Zinchenko is another one who stepped in today. He played the full 90 as well. Yes, he did. Right. And it's so great to see Tierney playing some really meaningful minutes, right, in what is largely expected to be his final few weeks at the club before he returns home to Celtic. I believe that's basically a formality now from what's been reported. But how awesome for him that he's still so engaged and he's still so accepted within the club, the group, the fans, right? I love seeing his celebrations at the Bernabeu as well, right? But this is brilliant. We're on the cusp of something very, very special in the Champions League, and all of them get their moments to shine. Speaking of moments, right, you have to use your squad well in times like this, right? Because I'm glad we took Saka off when we did. I haven't even come to the goals yet. I will in a moment, but I just wanted to quickly touch on squad utilization. Because if you can't play Sterling in matches like this against basically a relegated club to take off minutes of your key starters, then you know what really is the point, right? So I'm glad Mikel utilized him, and I have to shout out to Nathan Butler Owadeji, right? We have also seen him since all the injuries in January and Kai Havertz going down, unfortunately, in Dubai, and Jesus ACL, Martinelli, right, the hamstring at Newcastle. Nathan has been on the bench, I think since, I believe, every match he's been named as a substitute and really hasn't featured at all. And from what I understand, he knows this as well, that his future is elsewhere. I believe the club... would have sanctioned an exit in January if it weren't for all the injuries, right? We needed some forward cover. So how awesome for him, being at the club for so long, for his family, right? He's another academy product. It's so important for them that they just get the moment, right? And for him to come on, not like in the 94th minute and then 30 seconds later the final whistle blows and he hasn't even got a touch, but he got a good chunk of time towards the end there and almost scored, actually. It took a fantastic save to keep him out. What a moment that would have been for him. And I'm just glad he got that, right? Because that's something, no matter where your professional future lies, like whatever career he can, and hopefully he has a fantastic career wherever he ends up going if he leaves, right? You always got that. You've always got that moment, right? For him, his family, like, it means something. Like, this club means so much, especially the players who have been there since boys and have been nurtured through their teenage years, and to come make your senior debut in your early 20s, like, that's a lifetime memory, and I'm so glad for him. So that was fantastic. I cannot believe I've made it this far into the podcast and I haven't even mentioned any goals yet, right? So they deserve their own section because there's some beautiful goals scored. Arsenal were on this. We were on top just from the first whistle. I really felt the level of professionalism. It's almost as if we just continued. We picked up where we left off from the Bernabeu. Our system, our shape, and of course, look, I'm not comparing the two opponents. Like, this is a very poor Ipswich side, and I think the Premier League does have a bit of a problem with these promoted teams going straight back down, right? Because there's a clear gulf in class, right? So I'm not going to pretend that, you know, this, like you know, 4-0, the 4-0 victory against them, like we world beaters or anything. I'm not saying that. We note the quality of the opposition, but importantly, I just want to talk about us. I want to talk about Arsenal. So we picked up where we left off from the Bernabeu, and that's the thing that really struck me, that we weren't complacent, didn't take them lightly, didn't take anything for granted. We just did our thing, pressed them hard. We dominated ball control, ball possession, even with the amount of changes that we made. We switched out both fullbacks. Zinchenko started left back, White at right back. Jakub Kiwior and Saliba doing their thing, very untroubled largely. And we were just carving out opening after opening. Mikel Merino in midfield, right? I think this is a bit of a preview of what we're going to see now against PSG. I think that first leg, due to Partey's injury, and provided, touch wood, hopefully everyone else is still available, I will think you'll see him drop back. And interestingly, there's this little switching thing that we've done before between Trossard as a false nine And earlier in the season when Odegaard was out for a couple of months, this was quite noticeable. There were times when we almost moved into a 4-4-2, a quasi 4-4-2 formation with interchange between Trossard and Havertz at the time as the left eight and the false nine. So I do feel that this is maybe a little bit of a preview of what we're going to see, those two operating in tighter spaces, interchanging with each other where possible. Marina is absolutely essential, of course, as the outball. He's a dual monster, wins so many headers. And in fact, that's our opening goal against Madrid a few days ago. Sorry to make it about Madrid again, but just in case you hadn't noticed, I quite enjoyed that victory. And I'd like another moment to talk about it again, because just prior to Saka's beautiful opening goal, Raya had tried that ball 2-3 times in a row in the prior few minutes. He's looking for Marino in that channel. And Marino obviously won that header beautifully, got it onto Saka, and from there we just picked them apart to score, to create the space. So he's very important as an outball. So he's a very important figure, a profile, right? His height, his side, second, third duels, he's a monster, right? He's exactly the type of player that Arteta wants out there as much as possible. So him in midfield, while it may not be as desirable on paper, because we need him as the false nine. And look, you know, who thought that we'd be talking about this a couple of months ago, right, with that injury crisis, that all of a sudden, with every match, the significance and the importance of Mikel Merino grows, right? He's absolutely pivotal now. He's integral to this current Arsenal system, right? I shudder to think how we would have coped if we didn't have him to call upon, right? Because it could have been very, very different for Arsenal. But thankfully, it's not. And we are where we are now, thanks largely due to the quality of talent of players, their standards, stepping into the team and doing their thing. So Marino as into midfield, I do believe that's what we'll see in the first leg. And Trossard certainly put his hand up today. Two fine finishes, two goals. It was strange. I saw the stats that for such a proven goal scorer in his 2.5 years at the club, I believe this was his first time he scored. He scored twice in a match. And speaking of stats, Martinelli's 50th goal for the club as well. Well deserved. Fantastic. He's in a tremendous run of form that I'm very much hoping continues, because with Saka back now. And by the way, how good is Bukayo Saka, right? Since he's breathed new life into the club, he's almost been the lifeline for Arsenal's season, which was otherwise fizzling out when he returned against Fulham and scoring soon after and the scenes after that, right? It's propelled Arsenal since, right? His appearances, right? He's such a part of the fabric of Arsenal that having him out there doing his thing, right? It's changed the dynamics. It's changed the momentum of the club. And I'm so glad he's back, because he's just wonderful to watch. Speaking of wonderful to watch, right? Let's just call it like it is. That was a deserved red card from Davis, I believe it was, like a sickening tackle. And as much in terms of giving recognition, right, as much as we've been on the receiving end of some shocking calls, and they will continue to be shocking and baffle me, right, how some of the red cards we've received this season. Well done to Kavanagh. Mr. Chris, you left me no choice, Kavanagh, right? He could have bottled it, right? He could have just given him a yellow. But thankfully, finally, I've had a tiny little bit of faith restored that violent conduct, it does actually matter to the Premier League. It does actually matter to the officials, the officiating in the Premier League. Finally, because we've seen so many incidences this season dating back to that ridiculous chokehold by Wolves on Havertz when he grabbed him by the throat and slammed into the ground. And like, how can you escape that without a sanction, without a consequence? That's a blatant red card. I've seen Xhaka go for things similar to that, right? Anyway, it's so refreshing to have a referee actually say, nah, that is violent conduct, you're off, straight red. So well done to him, right? It's just restored a little bit of faith that violent conduct does exist, it does matter, and you should be off for that. It was a horrendous challenge. And it was just a strange, the aftermath of that is strange. I've always found this thing a bit odd in terms of footballing fandom, where you clap off the player who's been red carded, right? It's just a strange dynamic. It was odd seeing him, like, he was clapping the crowd, cheering the crowd, pointing at the badge as he's coming off. It was bizarre, mate. You just cost your team on the pitch. Anyway, so then in terms of a strange dynamic of football in fandom, the boos for Saka afterwards. It was utterly pathetic, absolutely pathetic. It was so reminiscent of Stoke with Aaron Ramsey, when that moment of madness from Shawcross, almost a career ender, like one of the most shocking injuries I've seen. It was so bad that this is what started to change the way TV broadcasters covered moments like this, right? They wouldn't show the replays because of how distressing the images were. And then they just showed Aaron Ramsey on a stretcher being given oxygen, right? It was really distressing for the 10, 12-minute break in play that it was. And then the way the Stoke fans booed him after, mate, he was the victim. He was the one who was basically assaulted, almost had his career ended, and you're booing him. And they were doing the same thing to Saka. It was just ridiculous. It would have been so poetically beautiful if Saka scored. He missed some gilt-edged chances. Like, let's call it like it is, right? Those were very un-Bukayo-like finishes. Obviously, he was affected by the injury. Thankfully, it wasn't too bad because it could have been a hell of a lot worse. But it would have been beautiful if he scored just to shut them up. Anyway, he came off in the second half, and I'm glad he did because I just had that awful feeling. I'm sure there were many others who felt the same, that the way Ipswich were playing and the way we were just dominating them, our away fans were having a day out, the olays, the chanting, right, that one of them would just, you know, fly in and just try and seriously injure someone else. So I'm just glad that didn't eventuate. Right, I would have happily blown the final whistle at halftime. Take the 2-0, take 3 points. It's crucial to Arsenal. I think we are looking more and more comfortable for second spot now. Newcastle lost a few days ago, so there's a nice little gap, a bit of breathing room again for the remaining fixtures of the Premier League. I think we will wrap up second place, but I would have taken the result at halftime. 2-0, blow the whistle, let's all go home, right, take the 3 points. But just glad no one got seriously hurt because it was, yeah, could have been a hell of a lot worse. So yes, I'll just quickly recap the remaining goals. What a wonderful second goal it was. Completely took them apart. White did really well to get that ball. It was on the bounce. Played it across to Trossard, who again, his first touch was everything. He got cut down. I think advantage was played and got it over to the right. We created the space. I'm going to say Mikel Merino meant this. So like I've seen it a number of times, and the way he celebrates tells me everything. What a brilliant back heel that was. Excellent awareness that Martinelli would be drifting into space, coming in behind him, a no look flick, you know, with his heel. It was brilliant, and then Martinelli bang, and it was a wonderful goal, wonderful team goal, just so aesthetically pleasing, beautiful to watch, and we were in complete control. We deserved it after Trossard's opener again, created from space coming down the right. And just got his shot away before losing his balance. And yeah, look, it was just a really comprehensive display. Second half, you know, I think we were largely playing within ourselves, and Ipswich, I think there was an air of inevitability. They were down a man, a red card. They're at 10 men, 2-0 down. There was a bit of just going through the motions for a while, which is, hey, fine by me, right? Because we obviously just want to get through these matches, get meaningful minutes into players' legs, try different things in terms of shape and systems, right? Get a number of other squad players involved and just see out the match and get the job done, which we did. Two more goals again. It was a matter of time before these short corners paid off because it was a noticeable tactic. And again, comes down to coaching, the quality of our coaching, because since Gabriel's injury, you know, we've lost a major threat. A major aerial threat at corners. We've been so successful there over the course of the season, even though it seems like it's been a little while since we've scored a header from a corner, but we were doing a number of these short corners and just creating some space. And then, yeah, Trossard is just basically left. He's just left unchallenged. Like, how could you give him that much space in the box? Found by Rice, and then an excellent finish, and it was 3-0. Ethan, I'm so glad he came on when he did, because he's he's not to be forgotten. Not that anyone is, of course. We've got a wonderful talent on our hands here, and he's still going to get opportunities. He's still going to get minutes in the remaining matches this season. And I know it was a heavily deflected goal, but I've seen the reverse angle. Right, that's a trademark Ethan Waneri cutting across the left and blast one into that side of the corner. So I reckon it was going in anyway. So that was to make it 4-0 to cap off a beautiful performance from Arsenal. So on that note, I'm going to leave this one there. I'll bring this one to a close. Thank you so much, as always, everyone, for listening. Please consider leaving me a like and subscribe on YouTube or your audio platforms. I very much would welcome any reviews, please, whether on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And I'll be back on again soon to talk about the build-up to the next match. Thank you so much again. Look after yourselves, stay well, and come on, Arsenal.